Chapter 3. Everyone was required to come to the Nightless City to pay homage to the Emperor, no matter their status, and any number of sects had chosen to pay another visit during the Emperor's absence, whether in search of profit or merely credit for fulfilling their duties, preferably without the risk of incurring their volatile Emperor's attention. One of those sects was Lanling Jin. Meng Yao felt both disappointment and relief when he learned that Jingguang Shan would not be coming himself, declining on the ground that it was just too miserable to go without his good friend the Emperor there, though it was far more likely that he didn't want to have to acknowledge the presence of Meng Yao, standing there in the Emperor's place. Instead, his father sent his one legitimate son and heir, Jin Sichuan, and Jin Sichuan brought his wives. The rumors of friendship between Wen Rohan and Jingguang Shan were exaggerated for effect, in Meng Yao's opinion, but there must be some basis to it. Otherwise, there was no way Jin Sichuan would have been allowed to hold such a treasure in his hands. He had married the last survivors of the Jiang clan, Jiang Yanli and her younger brother Jiang Cheng. Jiang Yanli, at least, was considered a prize, given that she brought with her the bloodline and legitimacy of a former great sect, and had at least a technical claim to a frankly eye-popping dowry, should the Emperor ever decide to allow her to reclaim the ownership of the Lotus Pier, even if in practice the place had been rapidly converted into a pleasure palace by his second son. Jin Sichuan had managed to win that race, having had the advantage of already being engaged to Jiang Yanli since birth, his mother having apparently been friends with the former Madame Jiang, known better as Madame Yu, given Jin Sichuan's character, not known to be especially good at either politics or finance. Meng Yao was of the belief, as were many people, that he had only taken Jiang Cheng as a bride in order to please his wife by saving the life of her younger brother after the Jiang sect was destroyed, since Jiang Cheng, the son of a fallen clan, represented little more than a gigantic target on the back of anyone who might claim him. Of course, rather than admit it, Jin Sichuan denied all such rumors and maintained consistently that he had been in love with both of them, desperately, and that had been the reason he'd petitioned for the right of marriage. Meng Yao also heard rumors that when Rohan found his insistence funny and agreed to the match on the condition that their marriage bed be witnessed, which sounded very much in line with what he knew of Wen Rohan's character, he would have enjoyed forcing them to consummate their fake marriage, luxuriated in their humiliation, and laughed when they failed to look each other in the eye later. Still, what wasn't worth doing to save a life? At any rate, regardless of anything else, Jin Sichuan was still the Emperor's subject, and therefore he had to come pay homage the same as anyone else. Meng Yao's brother by blood, although frustratingly not by law, had trouble looking directly at Meng Yao during the ceremony, but he managed to conduct the ritual of swearing loyalty moderately well regardless, with no indications of disrespect and perfect etiquette. It was only after, when Meng Yao had maliciously invited him to share a cup of tea to extend the duration of the awkwardness, that something broke. And it wasn't Jin Sichuan at all. "Is it true?" Jiang Cheng asked abruptly, the first words he'd said in this visit. And Meng Yao turned to look at him even as Jin Sichuan's face turned pale. "That the Emperor started fucking Huaisong." Huaisong, Meng Yao thought, rolling the name around in his mouth. Was Asong originally a Jiang then? But no, if he was, Jiang Cheng wouldn't have that look of desperation on his face, of longing and despair. Whoever this Huaisong had been in his previous life, Before he'd become an imperial consort, he'd been someone that Jiang Cheng had been very close to. Maybe even someone he had lost his heart to. Interesting. Or, well, interesting, but ultimately irrelevant. I have no insight into the Emperor's personal affairs, Meng Yao said, calm and placid as ever, especially when he is far away on a long voyage. Jiang Cheng scowled at him, but his sister put her hand on his shoulder, and he subsided, still looking upset. Meng Yao decided to show pity as a stratagem to put Jin Sichuan into his debt, and said, affecting a tone of mild sympathy, I have no reason to think he is, based on his conduct before leaving, and I understand that his travels were motivated by a search for a spiritual item capable of improving cultivation. It may be that he took Imperial Consort Asung with him on account of the consort's reputed scholarly achievements. To the extent Asung had any scholarly achievements, other than carting around a scholar's fan anyway. Jiang Cheng still scowled, but his shoulders relaxed a little, and Jiang Yanli sent Meng Yao a grateful look. Jin Sichuan seemed only a little moved, picking up his teacup and continuing the former conversation without a hitch. But when everything was done, he unexpectedly reached out and caught Meng Yao's arm. Meng Yao tensed, but Jin Sichuan took no movement against him, only looked at him. It was an unexpected pleasure to meet you, he said. Nothing he could have said without touching him. But then his hand shifted, and Meng Yao felt the prickle of paper beneath his palm. Meng Yao put a smile on his face and said some pleasantries, and as soon as Jin Sichuan left, he looked at the note he'd been smuggled. You're being targeted, it said, which was rather unhelpful, actually. He couldn't have included more details of who, what, or when, Meng Yao complained to Ajue later, making sure to look piteous out of habit, even though he knew Ajue didn't believe him at all. Or at least he shouldn't by this point. Or else Meng Yao's lessons on how to detect a liar were all going to waste. I don't know if it's because it's me that he didn't want to commit to saying too much. There is that awkwardness there. But it's not like I don't know people are trying to kill me. I'm the Emperor's viceroy. I've been making changes left and right in his absence, some of them extremely unpopular. And yet, others that were extremely popular. He'd known the Watchtower idea would win him acclaim among the common people, and that even if the smaller sects complained about the encroachment at first, they would soon, or at least eventually, realize that it was in their own best interests. And really, he left a note. Why be ominous and vague in a note?
Perhaps he meant something more general, Ajue said.
Meng Yao looked at him, and Ajue shrugged, averting his eyes. The action, so obviously indicating that he had something to say and wasn't saying it for whatever reason, should have irritated Meng Yao. But by now he'd grown to find Ajue's thorough inability to dissemble directly rather adorable. Such a big man, older than Meng Yao, and he still blushed when he tried to lie to your face. You can go on, Meng Yao coaxed. I'm not going to be angry.
Don't treat me like I'm five.
Who's a big boy who knows something he's not saying? You are. Yes, you are. Ajue tried to look disapproving, but ended up having to hide his sniggering into his sleeve.
That's more like you treat a dog, Viceroy Meng. Not that you know, given how much you hate them.
I don't hate dogs, Meng Yao said. I gave Jin Sichuan's eldest a spiritual dog just last year, a husky.
It's gigantic man-eaters I object to.
Northern mountain dogs are a bit large,
Adjuek conceded, a little reluctantly. But in fairness, at his size, the mountain dogs were probably proportional in size to regular dogs. Actually, Adre's accent, however blurred by time and assimilation, suggested he was from somewhere to north of the Nightless City. Maybe he'd drunk the same water as the dogs growing up, explaining how he reached his current heights.
And aren't you the one who's always saying that you keep things from people that they don't need to know?
I like being the person to decide who needs to know what, Meng Yao said. Now, you clearly want to tell me, so just tell me already.
Achua sighed. Has it ever occurred to you that maybe the job is supposed to kill you?
Meng Yao frowned. What do you mean?
You're the Emperor's viceroy,
Achua said.
He appointed you and then he immediately left you alone to more or less run the entirety of his domain. He gave you the power of authority to speak with his voice. That's a pretty big promotion from Chief Torturer, wouldn't you say?
Meng Yao would not describe being the deputy in charge of the Fire Palace as Chief Torturer. Prisons required a great deal of management. He wasn't just torturing people anymore. But he couldn't exactly say that Adjue was wrong. He'd enjoyed his success, but he'd been startled by it, too. He'd had to fight and scheme for every last thing that he'd ever wanted before this. And while he'd had to do more than a bit of tussling to keep this role over the overtures of the other deputies, it did sometimes feel as though this promotion came a little too easily, too suddenly. What do you think, then? He asked, folding his hands together under his sleeves, so no one could see how his nails dug into his flesh. If there was one thing he truly hated, it was the scorn of others, those who thought they were better than him. Being schemed against was a very close second.
Some of your policies are, in fact, very unpopular,
Adjue said.
Even though we both know that they're necessary. The Emperor would know that they were necessary, too.
You think he wants me as what? A scapegoat? When Rohan didn't pay attention to things like popularity, officially taking the position that strength was all that mattered, and yet only a fool ignored such things entirely. And when Rohan was no fool...
The Emperor is friends with Jingguangshan,
Adjue said quietly.
Not merely for show. And although Jingguangshan does exaggerate it somewhat, it's not as much as people think. Before he became Emperor, back when they were peers, they would often spend time together, do things together. And your existence offends Jingguangshan. People laugh at him for not having accepted you back then.
That was what Meng Yao wanted. He wanted to rub into his father's face how stupid he'd been. And Jingguangshan had done nothing, had just taken it. And in retrospect, that seemed rather uncharacteristic of someone of his reputation. So what? He asked, ignoring the blood on his nails, where his flesh could no longer take the pressure. You think he's pressing the Emperor to have me executed for failing to live up to his expectations?
Maybe,
Adjue said.
And perhaps the Emperor has incentivized others to try to make you fail.
Having people try to kill a stand-in would be a very effective way to see how those same people would try to kill you. It wasn't a bad plan, really. But Meng Yao really didn't appreciate it when it was aimed at him. Well, that's too bad, Meng Yao said. I will not fail. I will succeed, and so thoroughly that even the Emperor will be unable to deny my success. He enjoys being thought of as someone who rewards merit, and killing me would be seen as petty. He won't do it. I have my brain, my talent, my competence. I won't let him.
assuming, of course, that he survived until Wen Rohan's return.
You have me, too,
Ajue said. It was a nice sentiment, Meng Yao thought, and patted Ajue on the shoulder. And Ajue didn't even flinch this time. He didn't expect that Ajue really meant it, of course. Ajue was a guard of the inner hall, and to get that sort of position, he had to be loyal to Wen Rohan first and foremost. But it was nice of him to say it regardless. Meng Yao wondered, briefly, if now was a good time to let his hand linger on Ajue's shoulder, to turn the contact into a caress. He didn't think he'd even need to order Ajue into his bed at this point. That Ajue sincerely liked him, and that there was more to that liking than mere friendliness or even the stirrings of loyalty. If he asked, or even just indicated interest, Ajue would probably come to him entirely of his own volition. And yet, Meng Yao removed his hand, turning the conversation forcefully to some other subject, much to Ajue's evident relief. He was too busy, he told himself. There was no time to spend on dalliances. And anyway, he'd had his fill of sharing with Wen Rohan.